Perspective taking, that's a huge skill. You look at what Fortune 500 100 companies talk about it. They're the soft skills. I don't even like that term because they're not soft, they're really important. But the soft skills about what it means to be effective in all these different workplaces, it's being able to do those very things, right? It's not just being able to have the content knowledge, the academic knowledge, which I have no doubt, y'all are brilliant here. There's some amazing academic minds that are coming out of this district, out of this school. But how much more wise and deep and complex can we be as humans if we're able to understand and reach across different experiences, different perspectives, different cultures, and be able to say, I want to hear your story. I want to understand your reality of what it feels like to be a student who's not in the majority of Brentwood High School. What is that like for you every day? I don't understand it, but I want to. How can I challenge my teachers to bring in books and literature and different things if they're not already, to be able to bring those voices into the classroom space and engage in that? Right. Empathy is not a political statement. It's not a partisan issue. It's something that all of us should care deeply about and want to cultivate. So with that in mind, I want you, as we're work, as I'm here, I'm only here for 30 minutes today. Usually I get to do these workshops for days long or teach a whole college semester class. So it's a very small soundbite that I get to share with you today. But I pray that your hearts would be open. I pray that if there is a level of discomfort that you might feel, that you would lean into that and say, why am I feeling uncomfortable? Why is this pushing my buttons in a certain way? And what do I need to do to lean into that, right? The process of refining ourselves, of becoming a better version of ourselves, comes through experiencing a level of discomfort that moves us to a place of greater awareness and greater social change. And I do believe that that's what our public education system and our country should be all about, right? Moving to that place of positive social change for everyone. So with that, I'll begin. My family and I moved to Williamson County about 5.5 years ago from New York. We've lived all over the country. And I remember when we moved here, it was hot, it was the summer. And I remember neighbors, you know, very kind, very caring, came over, brought us some nice things. They said, welcome to the bubble. Welcome to the Williamson County bubble. Give me a thumbs up if you've ever heard anybody say that, right? Lots of you. Now, there's nothing wrong with a bubble, right? It's a place to make you feel safe and enclosed and comfy, and it's got nice edges around it. But the bubble that exists here is not the bubble that is in the world, right? It's not the bubble that exists outside of here. And there's bubbles everywhere. There's a bubble at Belmont. There's a bubble in different communities. But what I want to challenge us to think about today is, who is inside of our bubble? Who might be missing from our bubble? Right? What are the ways that we can, metaphorically speaking, pop that bubble to be able to allow other perspectives, other voices, other realities into our life to understand what it's like to be outside of that, right? Our world is a vast and deep and broad world. And while we're getting incredible academic preparation here in Williamson County, the kinds of skills and abilities that we want to be able to garner to be successful in higher education and in the workplace exist beyond the bubble. Okay? So I'm going to share a few stories with you. They're not the only stories I've had since I've lived here. I've had a lot of awesome, wonderful stories, a lot of great encounters with people who have open hearts and open minds. But I want to share a few poignant stories with you because I think the important thing is to recognize that these things are happening. They're happening amongst us. They're happening in our community. And if we're not aware that they're happening, we're not able to move to a level of making a positive change. So when we first moved here, we immediately found a place of worship, a church. And it was a very diverse church. It was just up the road from here, not far from Brentwood High School. And it was a hot summer night, and we were joining together with another church that is also in Brentwood. That's a predominantly white church. Our church is predominantly multicultural, multiracial. And I was really excited. I was like, this is great. And I didn't see a whole lot of this happening in New York, where I was from at the time. And I didn't see a lot of churches coming together in that way. So I was really excited about that. And so our family hopped in the car. We traveled to this church. This was the days of pop-up suppers. No, we can't do that anymore with COVID. But a lovely spread of food. Big audience awaited us, and people welcomed us in. We sat at tables with people that we didn't know. We broke bread together, and I believe there was some really meaningful conversation. And after the meal, they dismissed the kids off to have their vacation Bible school. Some of y'all probably know what that feels like. It's a fun time of learning, meeting new people. And my kids love that. They love meeting new people. They love engaging and being excited to be around all sorts of people. And so as the night concluded, and I still had that warm feeling in my soul. I felt really good. I went to go pick up my kids. And as I picked them up, there was a sheer look of pain and suffering on their faces. And I'm like, this is strange. We're at a happy place. This is a time of fun and learning. Why do y'all look like this? So my son, who's older, said, "Mom, we need to leave right now." And I was like, "Oh my goodness, there's not like the snacks they were offering? What's happening? What's going on?" So we ran, made our way out to the car, and immediately as the door shut, my kids started to cry, my daughter especially. I said, "What is going on?" And I said, "Mom, you'll never believe what happened tonight. We went in, we started off fine, and then they put us into these teams, and then kids asked what team name we wanted, and we were doing like some little Bible trivia or something, and all of a sudden, the team across the room from us, they turned to us, and they started chanting, "Build a wall! Build a wall!" And I remember my face just dropped. And my daughter said, "I don't understand, Mom. Were they doing that to us because we're brown? I don't understand, Mom. This was church, Mom. People are supposed to be loving here, Mom. Why were they doing this? And Mom, how come the adults didn't say anything? How come nobody spoke up? How come it was allowed to go on?" And I didn't have very good answers for her, only to give her a sense of compassion and to fill her up for the beautiful person that she is. And to keep her dignity and worth intact, but I didn't have answers to say about why that happened in a place that felt so nice. So surely enough, the next morning I called the pastor, and he was so upset, and he did a lot of things to rectify that issue with his congregation, and I do believe there was a sincerity in his heart. But that situation certainly stayed with us. Right? There were similar stories shared at different schools around Williamson County at that time that I remember being asked to come in and speak about of similar things that were said in elementary and middle schools. And that same messaging of who belongs and who doesn't, I kept feeling that in these different spaces. I also recall a couple years ago when my son was in middle school, and it was the beginning of the school year, and they were his history teacher was doing a unit on world religions. Y'all probably remember that or still remember that. And I remember the teacher put the term Muslim up on the board and asked the kids to kind of share out some words or things that they knew, right? Engaging that prior knowledge. And he came home and he was very distraught because he said, "Mom, all these kids just started saying really awful things, really negative, inflammatory words." And the teacher made a line on the board asking for, you know, different kinds of associations, and the side that was supposed to have some positive words was empty, Mom. He said, so I raised my hand, and I said, "Hey guys, you might not know this because of how I look. I'm a Christian, but my grandfather on my mom's side, he's Muslim, and he's from a different country." He said, "Mom, their faces dropped, because they didn't expect that, right? They know we're a Christian family, but they didn't expect it. That was a part of my family. So now that issue, Mom, that my teacher was teaching about, that became personal." He said, "Mom, I don't understand," because the teacher then asked the kids, "Well, how many of you know someone who's Muslim?" And the same hands that were eager and quick to wave, to give words on the side of the board that were filled with stereotypes and biases, those same hands now went down. Because they couldn't say that they knew anybody. They hadn't had any proximity or connection to anybody. So he said, "I don't understand that, Mom. How are we able to make all these statements of judgment on people we don't know?" I said, "Good question. You challenge your teacher to try to do better next time." That was the other thing he said. "Mom, why didn't the teacher, not in a political way, not in a partisan way, but why didn't the teacher speak up and say, 'Hey guys, I'm noticing that the very people that we have things to say about are the same people we know nothing about. I'm noticing that. What do we do as a community?'" I'm thinking about my oldest son. I have three children. My oldest son, we adopted at 17. He's black. And he's a teacher now in New York. Just finished a master's degree. And I think about the time he comes to visit us. Sometimes he'll bring a couple friends with him. And they love to go to the neighborhood park and play basketball or go work out in the fitness center or go to the pool with my kids. And I had to tell him as he's in our driveway, "Hey, don't be too loud. Don't be loud like me. I'm loud. But don't be too loud because I've already seen neighbors come by and ask, 'Who's that guy there? Does he live here?' I've seen cars go past them, kind of pull their windows down just about, not in a friendly way, but in an eye for, 'Do you belong here? with a master's degree, and I still have to be Mama Bear to say, be careful. Don't cut across a path to get to the park. Stay on the main road, right? Make sure you maybe have my daughter with you so that you're there as the big brother, so you have siblings with you. Don't go by yourself. That's the reality, friends. And that's only some of the realities. I said, I have lots of other great stories, and he loves visiting down here, and he loves coming here. But that's some of the lived experience and everyday things that may go unnoticed by us. They may go overlooked. And so I want to challenge you to think about the stories that might go overlooked in our school, that might not be positioned or surfaced as important narratives that we need to hear. I want to take you down a bit of an analogy for a moment to help us understand this issue a little bit deeper. I would argue, and I bet you would too, that talking about issues of mental health or mental illness and talking about issues of race or racism have a lot of stigma attached to it, right? They're not really like easy things that we sit down at the dinner table every night and talk about. Maybe we do, but probably most of us don't find them particularly easy to approach, right? And I'm not at all saying that they are the same thing, but follow me on this analogy. Imagine one of your friends, and maybe this is something that's happened to you, imagine one of your friends or your family members comes home and they say, hey, I got something really important to talk to you about, something really personal to me. Do you have a few minutes to listen? Sure, I got some time. Hey, I went to the doctor today, or I talked to somebody, and they told me that the kind of feelings that I've been having, the experience that I've been having, I think I have anxiety and depression. I'm not feeling myself in this space. I feel like people are looking at me as an outsider. I feel like I'm different. I feel like the kinds of emotions that I carry with me are different, and I feel like I don't belong. I feel stigmatized. And the listener or the friend says, what do you mean? That doesn't exist. You're just making it too big of a deal. Why are you talking about it? By talking about it, you're making it a bigger issue. Why don't you just be quiet and go away? You're just having a bad day. You're like all of us. It's not the same. We don't see that issue here. It doesn't happen here. We're okay. I don't know about you, but that doesn't feel very good to my spirit, right? That doesn't feel good inside of me to know that somebody might receive that level of feedback if that's what's shared with them. Somebody's willing to be vulnerable and open, and they're not received with the same level of empathy and validation. Now take out depression and anxiety and put in somebody's lived experience as a racial minority or as a religious minority or an ethnic minority at Brentwood High School in Williamson County or in the United States. And they share with you something very personal about something that's been said to them that's disparaging, a comment that's been made about their identity. And we have a choice to respond with, you know, I'm sure they didn't mean that. It's not that bad here. We all like each other. We all come from good families. Or you have the choice to say, I'm really sorry that that happened to you. I don't understand because I don't want to go through the world that way, but help me understand. Help me gain the insight and the perspective to be able to be there for you when you're experiencing this. And help me understand what you want to do about this. Who should we talk to? Who should we talk to for support about this? What do you think? Right? Those two approaches are very different. And so I ask yourself to think about, what approach are you taking? How are you responding in the face of these situations? And if you haven't been faced with somebody sharing that reality with you, ask yourself why. Back to that bubble. Who's in my bubble? Whose voices am I missing? Whose perspectives am I missing? So I want to leave you with a little acronym to think about this as an action step, right? The word pause, right? Sometimes you can hear people say, oh, stop, pause, and think about this. I'm a big talker, so I need to pause a lot. To pause and listen, to pause and hear other people's perspectives. So I want you to think about the word pause as we consider the ways that we approach these conversations. I don't even want to call them difficult conversations. I want to call them crucial conversations. Because if we say difficult, then we're closing ourselves up to say it's too hard. I want to say courageous. That's what I tell my college students. These are courageous conversations. They require a level of vulnerability and strength and authenticity and openness. Again, I'm pretty sure those are four characteristics we would want in friendship. Those are characteristics we would want in our leaders. Those are characteristics we would want in our higher education experience and in our workplace. Authenticity, courage, vulnerability, perspective taking. Those are all things that are so important for all of us. So I go back to pause. The P in pause for pay attention, right? What am I missing out? Whose voices am I missing? What kind of experiences am I missing out in the school? Who do I need to kind of connect with to hear what it's like for them in my school? A, acknowledge your assumptions. What are my assumptions about, fill in the blank, that group of people, that particular community? Right, I'm going back to the example in the middle school history class. All these assumptions about a group of people, no experience, right? The Venn diagrams don't touch. So what are my own assumptions? Then the you, understand your own perspective. How have my assumptions shaped my perspective? Right? How is my worldview? What's influencing that, and what do I need to influence it? And I'm not talking about from a faith perspective worldview. I'm talking about looking at how we view other people, which should be from our faith tradition if we are coming from that. Right? All of these things should give us an even greater sense of urgency to act with empathy and kindness. So after we've understood our perspective, the U.S., we seek different perspectives. What are the different points of view that I want to be aware of? I don't have to agree with all of them, but how can I hold space for them? And then E, examine your options and make an objective decision, right? How can I, after I've done all these things to listen through and to invite diverse perspectives, how can I make a decision? It's very easy right now to think about all the things happening either in our community or in our world that feel unjust and say, well, that's happening out there, that's too big. That doesn't belong to me. But my pastor encourages all of us, before we point a finger, make sure we point a thumb, right? What is that level of soul work, of deep reckoning that I need to do inside of myself to see the areas that I need to grow and change and improve upon? It doesn't make me a bad person to be honest with myself, to be able to say, here are the ways that I have fallen short when it comes to understanding and appreciating other people's perspectives. Understanding the lived experiences of different students in my community. If I haven't done right by that, the honest and vulnerable and truthful place to be in that is to say, how can I do better? What can I do to become a better version of that in this school community? Maybe I'm okay with the diversity here at Brentwood High School or in Williamson County because it's familiar to me. Oh, these are my neighbors. But what do I say about the students that go to school down the street from us at Metro, right? What are the kinds of comments that I might have made about a particular zip code or neighborhood or community in my own city, or maybe even a high school in my own county? What are the kinds of things that I've allowed people to say that I haven't intervened or interjected or said, hey, do you actually know anybody from that school? Have you spent any time in that community? I'll share with you what happens when we do spend time with folks. In addition to my full-time job as a professor at Belmont, I get to do a lot of speaking. I also have a ministry for single moms in Nashville. And I spend a lot of time hanging out and advocating and just enjoying time with people who are living in a very different way than we are, right? And if I did not do that, if I just listened to the media sound bites or the statistics about a particular zip code, I would be missing out on some of the most meaningful relationships that I have in my life. They are life-giving, they are transformative. I get to walk alongside women every day who are challenged by every obstacle that exists in society. They want to work, they can't get daycare. They can't get daycare because they're living in a car and they don't have an address. Can you imagine what that's like to be sleeping in a car with children? There are people just down our street who are doing that, right? And I know them well, and I care for them deeply. So these are the lived realities in our community. If we can quickly acknowledge that there are underprivileged people, right, we hear that term, underprivileged, communities, schools, neighborhoods, then in order for someone to be underprivileged or a community to exist in that way, we have to have the opposite, which is overprivileged, right? So if we can acknowledge that one exists, we have to be able to see that the other does too. And in acknowledging that, we are not initiating a sense of guilt or remorse, but rather a sense of stewardship. What do I do with the benefits and the gifts that have been given to me in this community? What do I do with that? What do I do to seek the perspectives of people who are different, who are coming from different communities? How do I resist stereotypes and biases about people go to school down the street or in a different county. If I'm not doing those things, then I'm not actively working to open my heart and mind to other things. So I just want to encourage you as we leave today to think about, as your principal said so well, how would someone assess your humanity? What would they say about the students leaving here? Would they say they have excellent grades, but are they well prepared to be able to lead with a compassion and a care that's going to change the world? I would hope so. And I believe that there are already, that foundation's already been built here, and that there are pillars of justice that already exist in this community, and that all of you are going to do so much more to build on that strength that already exists today. So I wish you a wonderful day ahead and a great